What the Health with Gabby Allen on FUBAR Radio.
Good morning and welcome to What the Health with me, Georges Bertineau, standing in for Gabby Allen. A little bit about myself. I'm an online coach helping everyday people make everyday better decisions. I have a BSc in sports rehabilitation. I have worked in professional sport for 5 years and that has ranged from the championship to the National League. And I've been a fitness and health expert for over a decade. Now I'm here to talk to you about the world of health and fitness. And we're going to be supporting you through your fitness journeys. Each week I'll be joined by a range of guests to dissect the latest fitness trends, separating facts from myth and advising you on achieving your health and fitness goals. Today we're going to be joined by Alex Mutton, retreat host and mentor, and Danielle Haig, business psychologist. Now this week on Mythbusters, we're going to be discussing microplastics. Joining me now is Dr. Rosa Busquets, Associate Professor in Analytical Chemistry and Forensics at Kingston University. Dr. Rosa, welcome. How are you?
Hello. I'm very well. Thank you. Good morning.
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. Right, we're going to jump straight into the questions, okay? First of all, can you explain what microplastics are?
Yes, microplastics are pieces of plastic and their size is what defines them. They are from 5 millimeters, so like a grain of rice, until as small as the thickness of a hair, 1 micrometer or even 0.1 micrometer. That's super, super small.
Okay, so where are the most common places to find these microplastics? Where would we usually kind of locate them, or where would they kind of be?
They will be usually close to plastic because they form from the degradation of bigger plastic. So from plastic packaging, bottles of water, we can find them in rivers, in the litter in the street. Even we breathe them because they are in air from our jumpers. They shed fibers. They are microplastics. Polyester is a microplastic.
Oh, okay. So, for example, it is, so let's say, a bottle of water, if it's, obviously it's quite hard to break down and so on, but like are you saying that it's something that it's like a particle that comes off of a bottle of plastic water, for example, or other things?
Yes, the bottle of water, every time that we open and close, we may be breaking a little bit the lid. Also, from the production of the plastic bottle, there may be leftovers of plastic particles, and the factory producing drinking water may have their machines that are getting broken a little bit, and this will pass on to the product.
Wow, okay, so these are absolutely microscopic in some regards. So would some of them be, are they all microscopic, like impossible to see to the naked eye, or?
Some of them are big, 5 millimeters, we can see them perfectly.
Yeah.
But when they are very, very small, even fibers, we don't see them. We need powerful microscopes.
Okay. Are there any surprising items that contain microplastics? So anything that you wouldn't, you know, someone like myself wouldn't normally associate it with. So for me, when you say microplastic, I think, oh, bottle of water or anything that might be plastic packaging for food, you know, or whatever. But is there anything that is completely out there and completely, you know, unassociated with plastic potentially?
Food is contaminated with microplastics. Like there is a recent publication on olive oils because of the plastic bottles. You know this grass that is green and is made of plastic and people use a lot?
AstroTurf.
Yeah, yes. It is breaking down because the sun is making the plastic brittle.
Okay.
And it's releasing a lot of microplastics in the city.
Right, okay, so AstroTurf, 3G, 4G, that as well is obviously microplastics.
Yeah.
And that's breaking down the artificial grass, which is then going into the air and we're breathing it in.
Exactly. The exposure to the sun burns it, makes it more brittle, and then cities have microplastics and playing grounds, for instance.
Wow. Okay. Well, I never really kind of saw it like that. Mm. Okay. So, like you said, foods have it as well because of packaging.
Yes.
Okay. So is there a particular way that food should probably be packaged instead, do you feel?
Well, if it was paper-based or aluminium foil, then it wouldn't have microplastics, or glass, for instance.
Yeah. Okay. Why are microplastics so harmful?
The thing is that we're still not sure that they are so harmful because sometimes we worry before having the evidence. The evidence is just coming up. There are papers, research works that have found microplastics in the arteria, in placentas, in brains, in testicles. It's true that these studies have not been done in a normal, clean and lab environment. But because the papers point towards a trend, we think that they may be reliable, even though some contamination may have happened in these studies.
Okay, so you're thinking because of the way the kind of world is going and how we're so reliant on plastic, and again, for someone who's involved in health and fitness, and the increase in 3G, 4G AstroTurf pitches, especially in Europe, because of, you know, there's so much more sunlight, so it's cost so much more to water pitches, and it, although we water 3Gs and 4Gs, it's probably cheaper than having a grass pitch. You're seeing that there, you're seeing that there's an actual trend that is increasing, that, you know, microplastics are everywhere.
Exactly. There is a study, in this case is in Spain, where they were analyzing AstroTurf microplastics in the on the beach, and the concentrations were very high, so it was with the runoff, it spreads. So imagine the surface of this surface is very wide.
Yeah,
it's harmful.
Okay, what impact can microplastics have on you physically or us physically?
The studies that are available at the moment, they see inflammation. So if there is inflammation around a microplastic, it means that your body is slightly weaker. But this is still under study. If we confirm that there are microplastics in the brain or in an arteroma, this can have severe consequences, but more papers are needed because just a few, one needs to be cautious. But it would make sense that if there are particles in the plaque in our arteria, they are making it stiffer, and then this will cause having higher blood pressure.
Okay, so like you said, higher blood pressure and more inflammation. Now, obviously, inflammation is a negative byproduct anyway, right?
Yes.
But, okay, fine. Can overconsumption lead to dementia, potentially?
We don't know, but it's not good to have plastic particles in the brain if these studies are confirmed.
Mm.
It's very difficult to do these studies because you need ethical approval, you need to be in contact with a hospital and have access to brains. That's why they are not there, and you need the right microscopes. So universities like mine, we have the right microscopes, but they are not widely available. So I think we are going to know more in a couple of years. I would say that plastic particles in the brain or in the testicles are a bad sign. They may not be healthy microplastics.
Okay. And what kind of research are you guys doing at the University of Kingston at the moment? Are you doing anything in particular?
Yes. So we do different kinds of research related with microplastics. We do monitoring studies, so we look for them in rivers, for instance, in fish, in soils, in cities, but we also are not happy enough to check the concentrations and the kind of this pollutant. We also like to treat it, so we make new technologies to completely degrade them because there is market for it, and we want to make sure that when we propose an approach to completely degrade microplastics is effective.
Okay, and what kind of gizmos are you kind of making at the moment? Is there anything you're kind of making at the moment that is going to help with this? Or
yes, we have effective filters.
Okay,
and then we also have some completely new technologies that are based on light and radiation to eliminate completely microplastics.
Okay, it sounds like you guys are pretty busy at the King's University, and I'm assuming you use all the students that are on what sort of degree again? It was analytical chemistry and forensics. So you have these students helping you or working alongside you working on these projects, correct?
Yes, we have from BSc students, we also have master students, PhD students, even companies are investing in technologies to degrade microplastics. So we have funding from a company, Anamat, and then we have a European project, Horizons, European project, to make devices to remove microplastics and other pollutants from drinking water.
Okay. What advice can you offer to reduce consumption of microplastics?
Completely, I would say, don't shop products that are packaged with plastic, because even though we can clean them, with our naked eyes, we don't see the particles left. So, for instance, milk, liquids especially, milk, juice, water, it's always better another kind of packaging. And then we also have to educate ourselves and use our common sense. There's no point in having potatoes or broccoli or onions or oranges in plastic bags. That is a bit pointless.
So potentially doing your shopping and using a paper bag would be better than using a plastic bag?
Yeah, much better, because the plastic is not that it keeps the food in better conditions. We are contaminating the food.
Yeah. Okay. Right, perfect. Well, Dr. Rosa, thank you so much for your time. Is there anything else you wanted to maybe share with us, or anything, you know, where can we find you? Do you have social media? Do you use LinkedIn? Is there anything you use? Do you have a website?
Yes, I use LinkedIn mainly, and then I have a website, and I am always very happy to communicate with everybody. My message to the consumer would be mindful, and that studies are still being done, so we need to be cautious with the studies that are appearing, but so far it points that microplastics may not be safe, so we should use the precautionary principle and try to stay away as much as we can from them.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time. You have a great rest of your day, and thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Right, guys, now I'm going to be moving on to exercise of the week. Now, I thought I'd do something a little bit different this week, and I thought I'd recommend an exercise not to do, and I thought I'd tell you exactly why. So, as an advocate for fitness and health, we all want to do the best exercise and the latest exercise, but the deadlift is an exercise that we see so many people doing wrong, so many people doing incorrectly. Now, I have always been a big advocate for variations of a deadlift, but I am never a big fan of doing a deadlift because so many people can do deadlifts incorrectly. So this is an exercise that I would suggest you avoid, because the gains that you'll get from this exercise are so minimal compared to if you were to break down the exercise. Now, you can do a Romanian deadlift. This would be a fantastic variation for loading hamstrings and the lower back. This is with a slight bend in the knee and using your body more of a crane-like motion, so more hinging from the hip than anything else. This is a very, very good exercise for, like I said, hamstrings and lower back, to strengthen or to come back from rehab, or if you have some muscular tightness, this is also really good because the weight pulls you down, but obviously you'll have to use your upper and mid back to make sure that you're not flexing too much in the spine. Now, there isn't flexing in the spine isn't the worst thing in the world, but it is under too much load. You know, we get taught, oh, you shouldn't lift with a flexed spine. Well, actually, if you load yourself in a flexed spine under a controlled weight and a comfortable weight, it's not necessarily that bad for you. Now, going on back onto why the deadlift is not an exercise that I would recommend, it's purely because it's very much an ego lift. Unless you're using the deadlift to actually be a strong man, strong woman, or a power lifter, it really doesn't really transfer. You can use, for example, a trap bar, which would help you if you're an athlete. Now, if you're an athlete or everyday person, a trap bar is really good because it's a mix between a deadlift and a squat. Now, we all know squats are a lot safer than deadlifts, but like I said, the deadlift is, in my eyes, not the best exercise to be doing. Now, going back onto what I was saying with the trap bar. So the trap bar is great because it's a mix between the two. So you're getting lots of load and you're actually able to lift in a safe position. So you're very much kind of going down into a squat position, but also into a deadlift position. So it's very much a hybrid exercise. And this is something that I would definitely recommend to anyone that has any knee pain, any lower back pain, or any sort of lower limb injury. It's a very good exercise. A trap bar or hex bar is what it's called. Now, again, final few bits and bobs with the deadlift. It's just the ego lift, and everyone just does it so wrong. So if you're struggling to do the exercise, first of all, make sure there is training plates or some sort of lift to the bar. If you're lifting it from the floor, that no one has the biomechanical advantage to lift it from the floor, because it's just so much further away than where it needs to be. It needs to be starting mid shin. Again, just try and avoid this exercise. It's an ego lift and it's not the healthiest for you. Now, coming up after this short break, I'm going to be joined by Alex Mutton, retreat host and mentor.
FUBAR Radio. Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
And we've got Miss Chloe Brockett in the studio.
It got to the point where I wasn't enjoying it as much as I used to. I used to love it. You know, it was my life. I wasn't in relationships because I was going on TOWIE. I wasn't, you know, invested in anything other than the show because I loved it so much. And then as I got older, I just didn't enjoy it anymore. I noticed that the cast around me had changed, all the OGs had gone, and I'd all of a sudden become an OG at 23 and was a bit like, you know what, I don't think this is for me anymore.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yeah. The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register to vote.
Is the sound of your mates alive? Is getting to more gigs this year and the next? Is the sound of saying, I got you, mate? Is the sound of mates enjoying even more of this? Is the sound of mates getting home instead of here? Click your seatbelt, because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
And I know conversion therapy doesn't work, because one of the most popular conversion therapy camps in America, I watched a documentary, it is a 2-week-long programme. They all share a room for the week. Now, look, I don't want to insinuate too much, but my one hope is that if they do get caught, they adopt a parenting tactic of making them smoke the whole packet. Oh, you like sucking cock, do you? Well, you're not leaving this room until all of these cocks have been sucked.
Politics Uncensored.
They can't turn off your water, because water is a human right. It's not like internet, which we can talk about.
Are you saying we should all stop paying?
I'm not saying we should all stop paying. I think no one should have to pay.
Their argument would be, prices are going up, we need all this money because we have to invest in our ageing Victoria infrastructure, which hasn't, there's been no new infrastructure built in sewage, whatever, since the Victorian era. How would you respond to that?
They're talking out of their backside. It's bullshit of the highest order.
Follow us at What The Health Show for more from Gabby. This is What The Health.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. This is What The Health on FUBAR Radio with me, Georges Bertineau, in for Gabby Allen. This week, I'm joined by Alex Mutton, retreat host and mentor. Alex, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. I'm very good. I've actually been here before.
You have?
Many, many years ago.
Okay,
nice. I can't think how many, but yeah, I'm very well. How are you?
Yeah, I'm brilliant. Thank you so much for asking. So you're comfortable? You ready?
I'm comfortable, yeah. Yeah.
Perfect. Right. So we're going to start with some quickfire questions, okay?
Oh, God.
Three words to describe yourself.
I'll go with how I'm feeling right now. Placid. A little bit cold. and content.
Nice. Upper or lower body in the gym?
Or in anything? I think predominantly upper, but you know, I know that I need to get those legs going, so I'm trying to kind of do a bit more lower these days.
Okay, especially with all the fashion of high rocks and everyone's kind of, is that a bit of you?
I've never got into that. I've never been like a big fitness guy. I'm very like, I'm a sort of lone wolf. Okay. I'll go and just do some weird stuff in the gym and hope for the best.
Nothing wrong with that. Working out in the morning or evening?
Predominantly morning. Yeah, morning.
Do you have a go-to cheat meal?
Go-to cheat meal, what would it be? I mean, it's probably like a big pizza or a burger, you know, your classic.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with that.
No.
Dream workout partner. So is there anyone, maybe someone, your biggest, I don't know, inspiration or...
Dream workout partner. Do you know, there's something I've never thought about before. Someone who's really bad, so that I look amazing. Like David Attenborough.
There you go. That'd be great. Great choice. You'd have great conversations.
Yeah.
And what is your workout anthem?
Workout anthem, Royal Britannia. I get that.
Right. So, how did you first get into organising retreats?
It's quite a long story, but I'll try and condense it. Basically, went through some life stuff. Mm-hmm. I was going to swear, but I stopped myself. Can we swear on this? We can.
Some life shit.
Yes. And it kind of forced a bit of a catalyst for like some pretty serious change in me. I was living a very kind of hedonistic lifestyle, very sort of unconscious, I would say. Went through kind of grief and loss, and then we went into COVID, and suddenly my life as I knew it was just completely changed overnight, and it kind of instigated this, I guess, I hate the phrase because it's a bit corny, but like a sort of spiritual awakening. I suddenly was seeing the world in a very different way. I wasn't dealing with certain things very well in my life, and I had resorted to the tools that I had in my locker at the time, which were drink and drugs, and they were very good in the short term at kind of making me forget about the problems that I was going through. And so I was in a bit of a bad way, and yeah, I just became curious. I was like, there must be something I can do to try and change this picture. Mm-hmm. Those can't be the only tools. There's got to be something else. So yeah, I started looking into doing like 10 minutes of yoga in the morning.
Nice.
Listening to some sort of nice sound frequencies. And you would find me at like 2 a.m. In the bath with like these like mad sounds playing. And my girlfriend at the time would be like, what the fuck are you doing? I'm like, I don't know.
It's not for everyone, is it? But like...
Well, I think she was just confused. And I was like, I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm just trying my best to like work out like how I can help myself here. So yeah, it just kind of it instigated this real process of wanting to learn how I can change myself, and I ended up going on a couple of retreats myself, and it really opened my eyes, and I kind of eventually ended up quitting everything I was doing back in 2023, because I was doing a load of other stuff, and I just needed to take some time, and I went off to India and did that sort of like classic go and find yourself type thing. And I did something over there called Vipassana, which is 10 days of silence, and all you can do is meditate, and you can't exercise, you can't masturbate. So
literally,
you might struggle with that one.
I might.
And yeah, so it was very, very kind of insular process, but incredible. I learned so much about how I process.
Very awakening.
Yeah, I learned so much about how I process emotion, how kind of we process emotion as a society. And anyway, came out of that and was like, I can't go back to what I was doing. I want to try and share some of these things that have really helped me. And so I kind of accidentally started a hike club. I basically, when I was in India, I would just get up and go for like a 6-7 hour walk with no idea where I was going.
Just stroll.
And it was like so cathartic, and I loved it. It was like this sort of sense of adventure. And I found myself just like processing a lot of stuff. And I was like, I really like this process. So when I got back to the UK, I was like, I want to try and carry that on. So I put an Instagram story up being like, hey, if anybody wants to come for a walk in the woods, I'll be leaving it this time. And I was like, am I going to get a load of like doggers, or is someone going to someone's going to bum me in the bushes. And I was, yeah, much to my dismay, none of that happened.
That's disappointing.
Yeah, I was a bit pissed off. So if there is anyone listening, my next hike
is this address.
But no, I was blown away by the response. I think it was one of the most replied to things I've ever put on Instagram or social media. There's all these people going like, yeah, I want to go out, you know, go hiking. I want to get out into nature. But, you know, my mates don't want to do it, or they think I'm weird for wanting to do it. So I kind of realized I tapped into this this need, this desire from others to go and do things differently.
Yeah, it's really fascinating, isn't it? Because, like, I think a lot of people are actually really lonely. And I think you probably noticed that when you put the request out there, or you put your story out there, and the amount of people that probably flooded towards you. Or people are scared to do new things or try new things, or, you know, maybe that it's kind of like maybe there was an element of they knew you from something and they felt comfortable kind of meeting up or going for a walk, and then you kind of build from there in your confidence.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are lonely, surrounded by people at the minute. Like, you know, especially living in London, there's fucking people everywhere. But we sort of live these quite strange lives now where we're quite closed down emotionally, you know, even just like with our voice, we don't really speak that often sometimes. Do you know what I mean? Like, you go on the tube and you're just like, fuck, don't
silent.
Say yeah. So we kind of like, yeah,
game of bogeys. Yeah, you go on the tube.
Yeah. Used to love Dick and Dom. So yeah, and actually that is one of the biggest things that I've found with the retreats, actually, and it's something that people are really searching for, and that's like a sense of community and just like being able to express openly and freely without weight attached to it. Because so on the retreats, what we'll often do is like a kind of like a sharing circle, which is like, for a lot of people, it's their worst nightmare, and it was for me, because, you know, you've got to sit with a group of strangers and you've got to fucking talk about your deepest and darkest stuff.
We listen and we don't judge.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, right?
Yeah, and it's this really amazing process. Like, people at first are kind of like, oh my God, I really don't want to do this. But it's one of the, for me especially, and I've seen it now happen, it's one of the most therapeutic things, because we weirdly don't do it sometimes with our nearest and dearest, like our friends and family, because saying it how it is sometimes from the heart, it comes with a weight attached. They've known you for X amount of years, and it's like this kind of judgment. So you can kind of close off a bit. So yeah, it's I think community and just, I think, doing things a little bit differently is what people are really hungry for at the minute.
Okay. So is that one of the things you can kind of expect from the retreats? Obviously your circle, what else can you kind of expect? Community, so, obviously, you mentioned.
Yeah. So the way that I approach like everything I'm doing at the minute is I just want to try and share things from a really like authentic place, stuff that's like genuinely helped me, because that's the only thing I can really speak about in confidence. I can't talk about stuff I've not done or I've not experienced. Yeah. So I'm like, hey, come and try these things. They've worked for me and I really enjoy them. It might not work for you, but just come give it a go. And so there's a kind of a bit of a lineup of different things that we do on there. So there's breath work. I don't know if you've ever done any breath work.
I have done a little bit. Yeah, I have.
Which is amazing. And it's obviously, it's a big term, breath work. It's also a big kind of new field of research, and there's lots of people doing loads of different things, but for me it was very, very powerful for trauma release. So all of this trauma emotion that I had not really processed, like going through grief and loss, I just kind of stored it, and I went and did a breathwork session over in Ibiza, and I'd heard about it before, and someone had told me like, oh, they sobbed their eyes out uncontrollably, and I was like, yeah, that won't happen to me, I'll be fine. 20 minutes in, I'm literally curled up in the fetal position,
really?
like sobbing like a child. I was just like letting out all of this emotion, and it was fucking incredible. I felt amazing afterwards. I was like, wow, I've been storing that.
Letting go of something that
so breathwork is amazing. It shuts down the kind of the frontal cortex a little bit, this sort of like part of the mind that deals with survival, and it's the worry mind, it's the anxious mind that gets shut off for a little bit. And it's really amazing when you do that, all of this stuff is able to kind of breathe a little bit and it comes to the surface. So breathwork is a big thing on the retreats. We obviously do yoga as well in the mornings, you know, moving the body and kind of the mindfulness aspect that goes with that. It's something that I think yoga was kind of my first entrance to all of this stuff, so I quite like to kind of include that. And then meditation is a big thing for me, and it's something that's quite hard to do. I don't know if you've ever kind of experimented.
Once upon a time I had an app, I can't remember what it was called, it was a couple of years ago. I did try meditation. That's kind of where I practiced my breathing work, but again, probably very, very different to what you're explaining.
Yeah, I mean, it's with all of this stuff, I'm not like a sort of holier than thou like yogi. I'm just like an average guy who's found this stuff, and I'm no,
works for you and
it works for me, and I'm no expert in it. I bring in experts who can kind of lead the stuff, and I do lead some stuff myself now, but with the meditation, for me, it's about finding that moment. It doesn't even have to be that long, just that moment where I can like shut down that frontal cortex, the worry mind, for a little bit, and like connect to source, we like to call it, like connecting to the universe, because the universe is very wise and it's far more intelligent than you could ever be. So just finding a way to be honest, that is a good way of summarizing all of the things that I do and all the stuff that I incorporate into retreat. It's about finding ways for you that you're able to just like close down that anxious mind for a little bit, close down the worry mind.
And so that's the one that we want to kind of close down and shut down so that we can kind of let our emotions out. And it
doesn't even have to be, you know, sitting down and closing your eyes meditation. Like for me, like I said, like some of the best forms of meditation are actually kind of active. So like, you know, going for a really long walk in the woods on my own, that's quite
peaceful.
That's therapeutic. And you know, imagine for you, it sounds like you're a kind of gym guy.
Yeah.
There's probably moments of meditation in there, like this frontal cortex part of the brain that we're talking about is very focused on the task at hand. And I don't know if you'll find, you know, sometimes you might be, I don't know, doing something on the treadmill, or you're like 20 minutes into something and you can find your brain going into quite an interesting state.
Yeah,
where you start to process things, right?
I've always referred to my mind as a labyrinth. And I feel that, like, I always get to the center, but it's like I never know which way to turn sometimes. And I feel that maybe that's something to do with the frontal lobe or the frontal cortex.
I mean, I'm no specialist with this. I just know my own experience with it. But the mind is so complex, and we kind of have these two things that are kind of operating in. They're not competing against each other, but they're operating against each other a little bit, I guess. You've got like the soul, and then you've got the kind of the human mind, right?
Okay.
And the soul is this part of us that's like connected to the universe, and it's like, you know, it's essentially very placid, and it knows that everything's going to be all right.
Yeah.
Then you've got the human mind that freaks out and thinks that nothing's going to be all right. Yeah. So they're kind of just in conflict with each other. So for me, it's like learning how to, you know, lean into the soul, into that kind of more universal side of ourselves. And every time I've done that, and every time I do that, life gets easier. It gets a bit simpler. It's like we need the frontal cortex. We need that part of our mind because it helps us navigate this like 3D realm that
is, of course,
you know, it's very real and tangible to us. So it is quite useful. So it's about trying to create a bit of a dance between the two.
Okay, so it's about balance. Well, life is about balance.
Balance, which is
key.
But it's so hard to get, and I struggled a lot with that. Yeah. I'm getting better at it.
Well, I think a lot of people do struggle with that balance, isn't it? And it's not just with our minds, it's with our heart. It's like what our heart wants and our mind needs, and it's all these wants and needs. And like you said, we live in a world where everything's everywhere, and
it's really complex. It's so hard, like especially the way that modern society has kind of gone. There's just so much stimulus, there's so much,
so
we're bombarded with like a million different bits of data every day, and it's like pulls you from left to right, pulls you in your emotional heart space, it pulls you in your mind, you're anxious. It's like it's really difficult to stay centered at times. And that's kind of, I guess, what the retreats are really good for. It's like stepping away from that chaos for a little bit, and gaining some perspective, both intrinsically and kind of externally as well.
So in regards to the retreats, do you have a favorite retreat you've ever organized? And where are they normally kind of based?
Do I have a favourite one? They're such special experiences. It's really hard to say which was the favourite, but I think I mean, the first one I ever did was in Wales, and it pissed it down with rain the whole time. And okay. I had like massive imposter syndrome because I was like, I've just brought basically 12 strangers off Instagram to the middle of nowhere,
yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing here. Like, this is really awkward.
That starts somewhere though, right?
Was that? Well, exactly. And so, you know, had imposter syndrome was raging. Anyway, we sat down and we did this first session of breathwork with a guy called Jack Witts, who now who leads a lot of the breathwork on some of my retreats. And we had this really powerful experience, and everybody sat around and shared afterwards. And mm-hmm. as it went around the group, I distinctly remember this moment. I was like hearing everybody's reasonings for coming and the stuff that they were going through. And it was like this light bulb moment. I was like, right, okay, I get it. Yes. Like, there's a reason that people are here. Like, and yeah, from that moment on, I was like, I really want to try and create as much of this type of environment as I can for people, just because I could feel the healing that was happening, and I could just feel the need for it.
Yeah.
So that was a big one. And then I think my second one after that would be the first time I did one abroad. So when I did it in Ibiza, for the first time, and Ibiza is kind of a special place to me. So that was epic. And just got back from Sri Lanka. I did one over there, which was incredible. Amazing place. First time I've ever been there as well. And looking forward to getting back, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure. And it sounds like you're very, very busy. Where can people find you? Like, do you have a website, Instagram?
Are you aware of Bebo? MySpace?
You know that came back for a while.
Did it?
Yeah, it did.
Oh, wow. Missed out on that one.
Yeah.
I'm on Instagram predominantly. I've got a website which is really outdated and need to update it. But yeah, Instagram is kind of the main one for me, which is Alex. And then Mitton, which is MYTTON, which is not MUTTON.
And again, just thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And just have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so
much. Big love. Bye.
Coming up after this, guys, I'm going to be joined by Danielle Haig, business psychologist.
FUBAR Radio. That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
I am joined now by Ricardo Mighty. He is the CEO of Mighty Labs.
I just think if you're going to get into crypto, you just can't think short term. If you're trying to, I don't know, like pay your bills next month and you think I'm going to invest in crypto this month and then I'm going to take the gains out and do something with, you just can't think like that, because 99.9% of the time, the market doesn't work the way you want it to work. It works how it's going to work. The longer you have your investment in crypto, most likely the better it will do.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favorite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today. When you notice something wrong, it tends to grow and eventually take over, to the point you can't really think of anything else. If something in your body doesn't feel right, the thought it could be cancer can play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Finding out sooner is always better. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way. From this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out.
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
Have we got Miss Chloe Brockett in the studio?
It got to the point where I wasn't enjoying it as much as I used to. I used to love it. You know, it was my life. I wasn't in relationships because I was going on TOWIE. I wasn't, you know, invested in anything other than the show because I loved it so much. And then as I got older, I just didn't enjoy it anymore. I noticed that the cast around me had changed. All the OGs had gone and I'd all of a sudden become an OG at 23. And was a bit like, you know what, I don't think this is for me anymore.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on
on FUBAR Radio.
And I know conversion therapy doesn't work because one of the most popular conversion therapy camps in America, I watched a documentary, it is a 2-week long program. They all share a room for the week. Now, look, I don't want to insinuate too much, but my one hope is that if they do get caught, they adopt a parenting tactic of making them smoke the whole packet. Oh, you like sucking cock, do you? Well, you're not leaving this room until all of these cocks have been sucked.
Follow us at What The Health Show for more from Gabby. This is What The Health.
Welcome back to What The Health on FUBAR Radio with me, Georges Bertineau, in for Gabby Allen. Joining me now is Danielle Haig, business psychologist. Danielle, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
How are you? Well?
I'm really well, thank you. Very excited to be here.
Good, wonderful. Right, so we're going to be talking about popcorn brain. Yes. Can you explain to us what popcorn brain means?
Absolutely. So popcorn brain it's a phenomenon where our brains have gotten so used to just being bombarded with constant digital information. So whether it's a notification from social media, whether it's our emails, whatever it might be on our phones, just binging all the time. And our brains have just gotten really used to this overstimulation and kind of instant gratification. Everything is now and rapid and constant. And basically, as a consequence, anything else that seems vaguely slow or kind of like in the normal non-digital world feels really kind of boring and difficult. And we're finding it hard to concentrate because of it, basically.
Yes, yeah, so it's like that short attention span. Or so I heard it as TikTok brain. I'm guessing that's similar thing. It's kind of short attention span, lots of scrolling. I mean, I guess it's because we've got this data in our face. You know, we were just speaking with Alex about it. Yeah. There's data everywhere now. So it's very much everything is kind of being thrown at us.
Yeah.
It's like our brains aren't really getting that satisfaction.
Absolutely. Well, it's more than that. It's kind of like, so everything is designed now to sell something to you or to kind of get your attention for something. Yes. data all the time, and every single person counts. So every time you look at an Instagram post or every time you engage with something, someone somewhere is making money, so yes, they want your attention constantly. And so social media has been built now very cleverly with psychologists are behind lots of our apps and our digital devices. And it taps into our dopamine receptors. So our dopamine receptor, we talk about it all the time. It's got really good press, dopamine dressing, all of these kind of things. But basically, dopamine is in our brain to help us learn things, to become better at a skill. So what happens is you try something out and you find it quite challenging, but it's exciting. So it acknowledges and kind of ignites this dopamine receptor within us. And that's how we learn and we grow. But with social media, you're constantly being tapping into your dopamine receptor, but there's no growth. There's nothing challenging. So we become addicted. And it's also responsible for our addiction. So social media is made to make you addicted to it, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's like hit. You're always looking for the next high, next hit.
Absolutely.
I guess it's a good thing that they've brought in, at least on Instagram, where you can turn off likes and comments, because some people get so obsessed by it.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've been one of those people. I couldn't care. Like, you don't want to like my picture, I don't care. You don't want to comment, I don't care. Like, it doesn't bring me satisfaction.
Yeah.
But I can see how it's kind of addictive, isn't
absolutely.
It? It hooks people in.
100%.
So, you know, what the main symptoms of popcorn brain? So you mentioned some things, but, you know.
Absolutely. Well, it's called popcorn brain because imagine, like, you've put some kernels in the microwave or in a pot and it's just bouncing all popcorn over the place. Yeah.
Sorry, I got distracted.
I am also a big popcorn fan. But yes, absolutely. So it's like bouncing all over the place. And that's very much what people's brains are like. So you find it difficult to hold concentration, basically. You're trying to, I don't know, say for example, do something non-digital, reading a book, and actually find yourself just somehow miraculously picking up your phone. And I've seen people sitting on the tube before, like with a book, and then their phone here in front of the book, and I'm thinking, what are you doing? Like, put the phone away.
Are you taking a picture of the book to prove that you're reading? What are you doing? Like, what are you trying to achieve
here? But it's just constantly, like, we're just so programmed now to just be constantly interactive with these devices. So anything outside of the world becomes very difficult to concentrate, outside of the digital world becomes really difficult to concentrate on. So what are the symptoms? You can't concentrate. That's the biggest one. You're finding it really difficult. But then there's other responses as well. So that's like a behavioral response, but then there's emotional responses. So us Brits, one of our favourite pastimes used to be queuing. Loved it. Now, hate it. Hate queuing because it feels... But it feels like a real slow slog and you get really frustrated. So you have these emotional responses as well because things aren't rapid. You aren't getting this instant gratification. Mm. So anything that is delayed in gratification becomes really emotionally difficult. And then there's a psychological response where basically your brain's just bouncing all over the place. You can't hold a thought. So there's behavioural, psychological and emotional responses.
Okay, it's fascinating. So obviously, you've said how social media kind of plays, you know, such a big part with it. And I'm guessing, you know, well, not guessing, but you've said how, you know, the symptoms of popcorn brain come from social media and that kind of quick fix and that dopamine hit.
Yeah.
Okay. Would you say that there's a link between popcorn brain and maybe ADHD?
I think it's a really interesting question. It's really important, first of all, to define, like, ADHD is a neurological disorder. Popcorn brain hasn't been classified as a disorder or anything. No. It's more like a response to your environment and things that are going on around you. So, say, for example, popcorn brain is caused by social media or our devices and just this constant kind of need for stimulation that's come from stimulation. Whereas ADHD, whether you had social media or not, you'd still kind of behave that way. You'd still have the same responses where you need constant stimulation. You're thinking all the time, you're bouncing around all over the place. But what we do know is that even though popcorn brain and ADHD are similar in the way that you respond to things...
Okay.
If you have a predisposition towards ADHD, social media will enhance your symptoms. It will make you worse, basically. So they're two different things, but they do have similar kind of behavioural outcomes.
Yeah, they go hand in hand.
Exactly.
They encourage each other, basically.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But I think that popcorn brain... And I'm sure loads of psychologists will be like, well, what are you talking about?
They're coming for you. Get a pitchfork out.
Am I going to make it home tonight? I'm not sure. But I think that popcorn brain is actually one of the reasons why more people are getting diagnosed with ADHD than ever before.
I was going to ask you this. So, I find that we live in a world where everyone kind of wants to be put in a box.
Yeah.
I probably have tendencies of ADHD. I got tested when I was a youngster, can't remember the outcome. I don't really care. I don't care about being put in a box.
It doesn't define
me. It doesn't define me. Like, I'm very weird, quirky, outgoing, outspoken, say it how it is, very black and white. But I feel that we live in a world and a time where people are like, oh, put me in this box, put me in this box. Like, why? Like, why do we...
I know. It's really weird, isn't it? I think, interestingly, people think it sets them apart. But actually... You just kind
we're
of being
all
the
different.
Same. Exactly. But it always reminds me of back in the day when I was younger, long time ago, when people were a bit different in inverted commas, there's like gothy people and then there were like, and it was like, I want to be different. But actually I'm grouping together with people and I'm the same.
Mm.
So it's really weird how we want to be defined. We want to know who we are. We want to be part of a group. And it's a whole other thing. I think it's really interesting question. I don't know why we're so obsessed with having all of these labels, but I find it confusing. I was at a talk the other day and this lady stood up and she's like, I'm this, I'm that, I'm blah, 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 blah. And I thought, God, that must be heavy to have all of those labels on
your
shoulders.
Did you put that on your CV? Is that part of your CV or are you just telling me who you are?
I don't know, because I thought to myself, I could be, if I really thought about it, I could put myself with all of these different labels. But why does that benefit me? Like, what's the difference? Why does that, what's good about that? I'm not sure.
Does it maybe lead back to what we're talking about and partly popcorn brain and how we are ingesting so much social media and we're seeing so many things and we're like, oh, I like the sound of that. I want to be like that.
Yeah.
And then instead of being unique, because we all are in our own right minds
absolutely.
And who we are all very unique. Yeah. No one person has the same atoms.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Even twins.
Yeah.
So I think in the grand scheme of things, I think it is that from that social media world that we're living in where people are ingesting so much information and they're looking at it and they're going, oh, I want to be put in this box.
Yeah.
Just be who you want to be. Well, if you want to be in the box, go in the box then.
To me, it's not for me. But, and I do find it curious, like this kind of like self-defining, and I think it makes me think of two things. One is it the globalization, where now social media means that we're suddenly accessed information of people everywhere around the globe. Mm-hmm. So we're feeling more not unique. Oh, God, I thought I'd gone off the radio there. So it feels like you're, you know, you're suddenly this tiny, irrelevant person, and there's billions and billions of people, and you've got access to all of them. So it's like, right, what can I do to make myself stand out? And I think that's also a social media product as well.
Yeah.
And the other point I can't really remember. So
that's fine. Well, yeah, and I get that. I see what you're saying.
Maybe I've got popcorn brain.
No. And we all have tendencies, right? We all jump off topic and we all forget train of thought. It's absolutely fine. I think the way we've got to look at it, right, is, yeah, everything is so easily accessible on social media. I've just come back from Thailand working abroad. Culture is so different.
Yeah.
I literally, like, feel like I've come back into a completely different world, different time zone. Well, I have, literally.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just, I think social media kind of unites us, but then it separates us at the same time.
Yeah.
We're always chasing the next high. We're always looking at the stars when we might have the moon right in front of us, right?
Absolutely.
Comparison 100%. Is a thief of all joy.
Absolutely.
And that's what we do. We do compare ourselves to the dude with the bigger biceps or the tighter waist or the girls with the bigger bums or the thigh gap or whatever it might be from a physical or whatever point of view.
And even on LinkedIn as well. You know, careers.
Well,
you know, comparison all the time. And I suffer from that majorly. My career is probably like my proudest thing in my life, so therefore I'm always like, oh my God, what's someone else doing? And it makes you feel rubbish. You know, I could be on the radio here with you, but someone else could post something saying they're doing, I don't know,
FOMO. You're missing out.
Exactly. And so I'm like, why aren't I doing that? What's wrong with me? So I think it's designed to make you feel that way. Because if you're always feeling like you're lacking, then guess what, you're marketable. I can sell you something. Absolutely. So it all comes back to selling something to
always
you.
Always about a product.
Absolutely.
And that's 100%. Where we live in now, whereas before it wasn't.
Exactly.
How do we manage popcorn brain?
Well, I think first of all, you have to acknowledge that you want to do something about it. You know, I work with people all over the world trying to help them understand their behaviors and the way that they think about things. And unless you want to make a change, unless you want to do something differently, it's never going to happen. You have to really want to do something. So I think that one of the best things you can do, and I did this myself and it was really startling, was put the notification on my phone that told me how much time I was spending on my phone every day. Oh, that was horrible.
Yeah, I do that.
It made me feel a bit yucky, to be honest. I was a bit like, God, I can't believe I've just spent, I don't know.
I cap certain apps as well.
Yes.
Like I turned it on and I made it so that I could have only maximum like an hour or two.
Yeah.
Something. I mean, 2 hours is a long time.
It's a long time.
But it's my job. Like, I have to remember, I make money from social media. So I have to keep doing what I do.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's about making money at the end of the day. But as someone said to me the other day, if you're making money from social media, absolutely fine. But if you're not, what are you doing with your life? Like, why are you spending so much time on it?
Yeah, my friend came from France. Again, completely different world.
Yeah.
He lives in South of France. He's a fireman.
Oh, wow.
He's like, you're always on your phone. I'm like, I'm doing work.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be on my phone.
Yeah.
Trust me.
But this is my job.
I would love to throw it in the ocean and never have to speak to anyone on my phone.
Yeah. Absolutely. Exactly. And I think, so if you're making money from it, fine. Absolutely. If you're not, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And someone said something to me the other day, which is a total deviation from what we're talking about, but kind of similar, which is every post is a boast.
Mm.
And I thought, oh my goodness, I've never heard that before, but it is so true. Like, every time, no matter what you're doing, post-wise, it's a boast. And again, it's leaning into this, you haven't got this, I've got this.
Look at
all the things that I've got. So don't lean into it. So first of all, social media, you have to acknowledge how much time you're spending on there. Have some kind of like information, some stats, some kind of tangible data that's telling you you're spending 8 hours a day on your phone. No, put it down, look up, live outside of your phone. So that's the first thing that I would do. Definitely do a detox, a digital detox.
Mm-hmm.
Delete your apps. Get, you know, if it's social media, if it's LinkedIn, if it's making you feel crappy about yourself, get rid of it, because it's not good for you.
Mm.
And it's just sitting with you constantly. It's like having your, you know, it's like having a frenemy with you constantly.
It's like a Tamagotchi, hey?
We're feeding
it by using it, right?
Oh my God, were we the Tamagotchi generation? We were actually being bred to be... social media fiends by constantly having to feed that little Tamagotchi. So definitely digital detox. Pay attention to how much time you're spending on there.
Yeah.
And start small. So say, for example, at dinner time, lunchtime, breakfast, I'm not going to have my phone. I'm going to put it away. I'm going to put it in another room. And just put some healthy boundaries in place.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds great.
And read and get a hobby.
Well, too many people's phones are their hobbies. So, Danielle, thank you so much for your time. Where can we find you on social media?
After everything I've just said. So Instagram, DH_coaching. You'll find me there posting lots of fun bits and bobs, obviously on LinkedIn, as I said, and also my website, daniellehaig.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Right, guys, I just want to thank a massive thank you to our guests, Rosa, Alex and Danielle, for joining us today on the show. You can also find me on GB Fitness and Health on Instagram if you have any questions. Also, a reminder, you can download the app and listen each week and follow us on What The Health Show on Instagram. The show is also available to be listened back to on all good podcasting platforms. There is also another show back next week at 11 a.m. So make sure you join us. My name is Georges. Thank you for listening. Have a great day. Goodbye.